Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the most electrifying, must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. Welcome to FFC. I am your host, the progeny of the revolution, Damian Gentile Ellinghaus, accompanied as always by good friend and lover of rich Long Island boys born with silver spoons in mouths, Ryan Doyle.
Were you stroking out, or is that a tribute to Goldust's best character work in WWE?
Yeah, you know, a little bit of Goldust, a little bit of MJF, a little bit of stroke, you know, just
cock, cock!
Cock, 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 cockamaney!
You got to look up the in-ring promo between him and Triple H with Flair. And as soon as he does that, Flair just like loses his shit.
Ah, Goldie. Good old Goldie. Now he's just like a boring 50-something year old white dude wrestler posting like weird anti-vax stuff.
Yeah, anti-vaxxer, but pro-trans. Go figure. That's Texas for you, baby.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I guess one out of two ain't bad.
Onions, Damian. Let our American onions figure their way out.
Yeah, sure. all right, so folks, we are here on the road to WrestleMania, and we are just careening towards the brick wall that is which WrestleMania is this? 50? 37? I forget. 37? 45?
38.
Okay, good.
We are good wrestling podcast hosts.
WrestleMania goes Hollywood.
It's 39, actually.
Yeah, see, so what I'm fucking listening to you for.
WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia. Like, no offense to Philadelphia, but I mean, like, 40. That should be a good crowd, though.
Which one of the... Who of the ECW originals are still alive? Dreamer's still alive. Sabu?
RVD.
Is Sabu still alive?
Sabu's still here.
Okay, RVD. Yep, RVD is doing his thing. Sandman, I'm pretty sure. Is he work backstage in WWE? No, he was.
No.
They offered him it, and he said, "Fuck that, I'm gonna be me."
Yes.
But one of those dudes Dudley's, works backstage, right? Is it Raven or someone works backstage?
Devon was if you want to count him. Devon was working backstage, but I think he left to go back to Impact.
Like Homicide, maybe somebody. One of those dudes, I feel like, was working backstage recently.
Rey Mysterio is still active.
Yeah, that's fine. So maybe we'll
it's
get
funny.
A...
He's gonna go in the Hall of Fame and then like could easily just do another 3 years.
Who was the first ECWWE champion? Was it Lashley?
Like from ECW?
No. Like the first ECWWE champion. Like when they brought back the ECW championship.
I wonder if it was Christian.
Maybe it was Christian. Well, maybe they'll do something fun for Philadelphia. Who knows?
It's Christian.
But also, you know, we got past AEW Revolution, and you know, once again, AEW reminds you that you know, top to bottom, they really put on one hell of a show, even if stories lack. The New Japan Cup is in full swing, and some interesting stuff happening this year for sure. Some big New Japan stuff in general. And then Ryan's got a couple of little humdingers, a little mania humdingers for us.
Mania zingers.
So let's just get right into it. Ryan, what polar are we drinking?
No polar. Still off the wagon, baby. Thanks to Damian. Damian making me a degenerate during the week.
I haven't done that.
Yes, you have. Okay, what do I have? I got... It is a New Belgium, but it's a new one. I promise you. It's a Voodoo Ranger.
Oh,
all right? Don't get mad at me.
They're like a whole different imprint now.
Yeah, well, they took over the convenience store bracket, you know?
They really did.
There was a hole waiting to be filled. Anyway, so by the Voodoo Ranger Juice Force IPA. That's right. We have some very strong war propaganda on my beer now. So there we go. Juice Force IPA. He really wanted Top Gun to win the best picture, but it didn't.
No, it didn't. That went to the most original movie released in the last 20 years.
Yes. Shout out to, that's right, Elvis. Elvis won.
A truly masterful performance by Ana de Armas as Elvis Presley.
Yeah. It's a hazy Imperial IPA. It is 9.5, so lucky all of you. Let's see how, let's see if I can remember how to do the top 10 countdown at the end of the episode.
You know, they say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And this winter, it's been all about the Sam Adams cold snap. The brew is good this year. And to be honest, the grocery store pickings been a little slim. I find cold snap to just be an extremely easy drinking white ale. And I'm going to ride that fucking wave for as long as, you know, until we hit the shoreline. And then before I get my surfboard back and go back, you know, out into the ocean. I don't surf. So cold snap's good.
They had a good winter one. I want to say it was called Old Fezziwig. Yes, there you go.
I remember Old Fezziwig. It was a weird one, but it was fun.
Yeah. It had like notes of cranberry in it and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. It was weird.
It was rich and spiced. There we go.
Rich and spiced. It was, they started putting that out. Like, they had like a winter variety pack that had a couple of weird, cool ones.
Black Lager, the Cold Snap, the Holiday White Ale, which I wonder how it compares to the Cold Snap. You got the Winter Lager and then the Boston Lager.
Yeah, it was a fun one.
Yeah. Named after the beloved Christmas Carol character.
Old Fezziwig?
Yeah, he was the boss.
That's Bruce Springsteen.
That's right. Bruce Springsteen was in Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol. We're gonna get you some presents on the New Jersey Turnpike.
Gotta get out of this town. Bruce Springsteen was pop punk before anyone else was pop punk.
Yeah, no, I'm not even joking around with that. He was. He did a better representation of that era, what like Bob Dylan was trying to do.
He was born to run so that the Wonder Years could write the, yes, the upsides.
And the entire Metzinger's.
Yeah, every song the Metzingers have ever
and
written
the
in their
album.
Life. And Gaslight Anthem.
I do like Gaslight Anthem, though.
Yeah, they're fun. And what's the other one of those? No, it's those two. Okay, anyway, Let's cheers to the road to WrestleMania. Point to the sign, Ryan.
To the boss. Oh, that's good. It's like Sunny D, but an IPA.
Oh, love that. That color Sunny D when I was younger gave me a really bad allergy reaction.
The California Sun one, the one that was like a darker orange.
Yeah, and it like made me break out in hives, and then my mom didn't let me have Sunny D for like a really long time.
Shit.
But it's okay. We got through. I moved out, so now I can have all the Sunny D I want.
I think my parents said I was allergic to Country Time pink lemonade powder, but it was just because like I was a fiend with it when I was 4. And like, we got to stop this. Good luck. It did, right?
Papa Ryan walked in on Tiny Ryan snorting it, calling himself the freshest lemon. And he was like, you know, son, you're allergic
to this. I'm
the
pink king. We got to put down to this.
All right. So a real quick Revolution rundown, right? So we said this last episode. We were wrong about one thing. We thought that Hobbs was going to be added to a triple threat versus in the TNT championship match with Wardlow versus Joe. That was not the case. He just earned a title shot the following week. But either way, we said last episode that we fully expected Revolution to deliver. We expected the Iron Man match to deliver. And I gotta say, it over-delivered. This is a pay-per-view that over-delivered. AEW, they know what they're doing when it comes to their pay-per-views. They do. I feel like there's only been one pay-per-view. Maybe it was like Full Gear last. No, was it Full Year? Full Gear last year. Was that the year where Hangman won?
Post Brawl Out or the one? I don't remember.
Well, point being, I can't remember the last time that I think there's only one pay-per-view in their history where I was like, eh, I didn't really care about that. But, you know, all the right people won here. No match was really bad at all. Ricky Starks beat Jericho nice and easy. Moving on to bigger and better things. Jungle Boy buried Christian Cage in the final burial match, and that was a lot of fun. First off, stupid sexy Jungle Boy. What are you doing coming out here in your fucking boots and your no shirt and your jeans? Fucking get out of here with that shit.
My street clothes.
Christian coming out here in his sleeveless turtleneck, that fucking nerd. That fucking nerd. But man, if Christian just still can't fucking go. This was, while I can see an argument that maybe this feud ran a little long, but I think it was aided by Jungle Boy getting hurt or Christian getting hurt. This feud, I feel, as long as it is followed up correctly, did wonders for Jungle Boy as a character. Jungle Boy finishing off Christian with the concerto was a really nice little touch, and taking a moment to kiss him on the forehead and have a moment to close the casket. I mean, listen, a little on the head, perhaps, with the whole like burying another father figure thing. However, Jungle Boy is the one that did it. He can, you know, he can use his father in a story however he wants. But it was a nice touch. And, you know, Jungle Boy, he's, and you know what? Let's give him the JR treatment. Jungle Jack Perry.
Jungle Jack Perry.
What the fuck
happened to Luchasaurus? Is he dead?
Nah,
we're done with you.
They did a feud. I don't know if he's hurt or something, but yeah. I don't know. AEW's got that problem with, like, I don't know who they're using right now. But either way, it helped his promo work. It gave him an edge while not moving him into full-on heel territory, which is really important because he resonates with the crowd. And Christian he's just such an effective mid-card heel. You know, Christian was really one of the better pickups for AEW. It was a little bit of a meme, I know, but he's been a great pickup for the mid-card, and I look forward to seeing what he does now that this feud with Jungle Boy is over.
Yeah, people are saying it was his last match. I highly doubt that.
I'd be kind of shocked. Like, if it is, he ended on a high note, God bless him. But I don't know. I feel like I haven't heard any rumblings about that yet. I feel like him and Edge are going to retire at the same time. Trucking right along, the 6-man tag match for the AEW World Trios Championship. Not only did the right people win in the House of Black, but this was a really fantastic match. This match really didn't have a build to speak of, but it did enough. And more importantly, so I don't know that I necessarily, I don't always buy the like Young Bucks matches are too choreographed shit. Like they are highly choreographed, and I don't know that I love them as much as the rest of the indie world, but I feel like the criticism went too far. But this did not feel like such an obscene spot fest. There were some moments where like Brody was staggering for a little longer than felt natural, but overall I thought the pacing on this match was really good, and every time Kenny and Malakai squared up, it was fucking electric. That Ooh. Had really big, like,
that was good.
Big fucking match energy. I really hope that they get a singles match together soon. And for me, honestly, the most important thing that happened was Kenny looked really good. Kenny looked the best he's looked since coming back in an AEW ring. No disrespect to the Death Triangle matches, but this felt like the strongest Kenny. He was booked in. He was protected incredibly well. You know, didn't take the pin, and now it looks like he's moving back to the singles division without much ruckus. All I really hope for is a nice establishing reign by the House of Black. Let them fucking terrorize that division. Establish Buddy and Brody throughout the rest of the card, and you know, maybe get Penelope in more than two matches. And you know, good result. Really, really fun match. The triple threat with Jamie Hayter, Saraya, and Ruby Soho, better than expected. And like, so I like Jamie Hayter a lot, and I haven't loved Saraya since coming back, but she pulled her weight in this one, and this might have been one of the best matches Ruby's had in AEW. The only thing I'll really say about this is that Ruby's heel turn, fun stuff, but I feel like they're going a little bit too heavy with the NWO shtick. But maybe that's me being jaded. Like, maybe it'll really work to get them all over.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little late, but all right, something new.
You know what? Ruby did her best work in WWE as Ruby Riott.
Yeah, no, I mean, she's born to be a heel. She wasn't
getting over with the crowd this way. It just is what it is. So stick it with Toni Storm and Saraya, do an outsiders thing. Yeah, sure, why not? If it makes if it brings more eyes on the women and they get more time, then I'll consider it a win.
All right, is like Britt Baker and Hayter faces now?
Yeah, Britt like helped out Hayter throughout the match. She only got involved when Toni Storm started getting involved. So. Yeah, they're full on faces, and I'm cool with it. Hayter's really great, and you know, we'll see.
I wonder what made them decide to switch Sheeta and Ruby. I guess more people just know Ruby at the end of the day.
I also read that like, not only was Sheeta hurt, but also she like goes back to Japan every month because I think she has a school there. So I don't know if that impacts booking in some way.
Yeah, probably.
But either way, you know, the match was solid. It is, again, embarrassing that it's the only fucking women's match in this entire pay-per-view, but whatever, I guess beating a dead horse with that. Hangman and Moxley. I mean, Hangman might be the best deathmatch wrestler in AEW.
Yeah, if you're going to beat Moxley, I'd give that to you.
He might be the best deathmatch guy in AEW. Every single one of those matches he's done is incredible. This feud has been really great for both of them. And I love that they were able to tell a Hangman finding himself story, or like Hangman believing in himself story, without going back to the well. Like, he didn't really doubt himself. It was more about, does he want to, you know, drag himself down to the depths with Moxley, and he did.
Gotta get the animal in you.
And I appreciate that Hangman. You know, that promo that he cut. You know, everyone talked about Moxley's stairwell promo, and it was great. But Hangman's promo that he cut, where it's just him very calm, being like, "I really hate violence. I detest it, but like, I will do it." Hangman is the right type of face in AEW, and Let's just keep him at the fucking top of the card for a while. I'm all about it.
Yeah. And literally hung his opponent to win the match.
Yeah.
That was brutal, dude. The delay of the chain like coming off the rope and like Moxley like flailing to the ground, that was chef's kiss.
This is the first time that Jon Moxley has tapped out in 10 years. The last time that he tapped out was in 2013 when he, as Dean Ambrose, got tapped out by Daniel Bryan.
What a coincidence.
This is like at most his sixth loss in AEW. Moxley is a really great example of how to protect your top guy, making people that beat him feel really important. And there were just a lot of points throughout this match where I was visibly cringing. At one point, when Moxley pulls out a fork in his boot, you know, we all kind of giggle, and Gina's like, what is this? Like, why has he just got a fork in his boot? And then he just started stabbing Hangman with it. And she was like, oh my God. Okay. I guess that's what he's doing. Just so many points. Hangman dragging the razor wire across Moxley, or I'm sorry, Moxley dragging it across Hangman. Just a lot of really great points. And Ryan, a hardcore death match without tax. No tax.
Ooh.
Fucking
no tax.
Fucking libertarian. Truly a Texas death match.
Hey, we don't want no woke tax in
No woke tax. Yeah, really just fantastic work by both men. Just really, really happy. Only complaint I had is that Moxley showed up the next day ready to work like nothing happened. It's kind of
Well, they always fucking do that.
Yeah, like he should have been
not
more
even
fucking
the classic like white gauze over the forehead.
Nah, just like, I'm good. I'm fine.
Yeah.
That kind of bothered me, but whatever. It is what it is. Wardlow versus Joe was a little divisive online, but personally, I was happy with it. Wardlow beat Samoa Joe in a headbutt. Can't remember any time a non-Samoan beat a Samoan in a headbutt contest.
I did not put two and two together on that one.
And tapped him out with his own move while just screaming at him to die.
My ponytail. I can't believe that whole fucking feud is predicated off a ponytail.
I think at one point, either like Excalibur or Tony talked about like how much Wardlow's ponytail meant to him, and I was like, okay, all right, let's be easy here. This isn't Angle's hair. You know, but the match was fun. They kept cutting to Hobbs, and Hobbs would go on to win the TNT championship on Dynamite that following week with help from QT Marshall, who continues to grace us with his presence. I'm fine with Wardlow beating Joe just to win it off of, you know, to get it dropped to Hobbs. I'm fine with that. Whatever. Wardlow will be fine. The tag match. The Guns versus the Acclaimed versus Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett versus Orange Cassidy and Danhausen. My big takeaway here is Danhausen and Orange Cassidy are fucking over as a team. I mean, those are just like the crowd was erupting for Danhausen. Can we give some props to Jeff Jarrett for just like still being this effective of a heel?
Oh, yeah, he was great, man.
To be honest, man, listen, I completely understand people being like, we don't need to keep giving time to Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett when we have so many people unused. I get that. I won't necessarily disagree with it. That being said, I think you can find worse people to give some TV time to, and I think they've been very good in this role.
They are such consummate professionals that like you have to give the floor to the both of them. You know what I mean?
I think my only complaint was Jeff Jarrett getting that aggressive with Aubrey and getting like no real comeuppance, but I'm sure something will happen at some point soon. But I love Jeff Jarrett getting that aggressive with Aubrey and just like, you know, Aubrey standing her ground, but ultimately, you know, wasn't about her. I don't know. I just, like you said, they're consummate professionals, and this ain't LOL TNA. Like, Jeff Jarrett being in the tag division like this really doesn't bother me. I understand then, you know, Orange Cassidy has an All-Atlantic Championship defense against him. Maybe you're seeing more of him than you want, but I don't know. I feel like I could have different complaints.
No, it's good too. You know, Jeff deserves a little run wherever, so I'm a fan of it.
Like, he looks great. Run. He looks great, and he can still go. Of all the fucking, like, 50-plus-year-olds you could have on a screen, he's not the one I'm going to complain about. He's not. And he's a fucking heat magnet still. The Guns, I mean, them winning, the crowd went silent.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because they're effective heels or because the crowd was unhappy with that? I don't know, but it's all about FTR coming back and, you know, oh, look at that. Uncle Dax, FTR bald, working the dirt sheets. You know,
My ass is healed, brother.
I agree with the internet at large. These fucking will they, won't they contract storylines are very fucking boring. MJF was the most interesting one since Punk's, and like, that's it. I don't need everyone to do it now.
I don't think AEW was intentionally doing it. Like, it was just FTR just like fucking around.
I don't know. Well, like, AEW's
on shaky ground. They can't fucking handle those anymore.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's AEW. I'm saying like, if for wrestlers, like, just go where you're gonna go, dude. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't care.
Best friends probably breaking up, I imagine.
I am really like, can we not give something to Chuck and Trent, stalwarts of that division? Like, seriously,
go walk out Orange and Danhausen.
I'm bummed about that. And then finally, MJF versus Bryan Danielson in a 60-minute Iron Man match. I don't want to spill too many words on this that haven't, you know, the words have already been spilled, but
best one in a decade.
There is a sizable contingent of people, not just random fans, but, you know, longtime reviewers, journalists, what have you, that are calling this quite possibly the best Iron Man match of all time. And to be honest, I understand that. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I have a great history when it comes to Iron Man matches. You know, the one that always sticks out to my mind is Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar. You know, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels didn't really deliver the way it should have. But, you know, I'm a little hard-pressed to remember many other very famous ones, so I'm maybe the wrong person to talk. But what I will say is, as a guy that loves an Iron Man match as a stipulation and as somebody that is a big fan of a long match, that was incredible. That was truly incredible. Danielson.
Yeah, it's like Tony his flowers. It's not easy to plan out a Iron Man match, especially one that goes into overtime as well. So.
No, that was, and you know, speaking of giving Tony flowers, I thought that this was such a great way to end this match. Sometimes, you know, unfortunately, great matches, they get undone by their finish. They fall flat, whatever. This not only had you hooked the entire time, but like time running out. Justin Roberts just being like, yeah, I guess MJF still keeps the championship. MJF gloating. Tony Schiavone getting so fucking amped that he gets to be like, nope, sudden death. MJF losing his mind. Him, the look on his face when he hit Danielson with the oxygen tank. Danielson busting out the yes chant for the first time since coming to AEW. And MJF tapping out Danielson after that, like, incredible, like, Danielson riling himself up for one last push. I mean, just a really great, great finish to an all-timer of a match. And this is not a match where you're going to look back and, you know, or rewatch it and be like, boy, Danielson really, like, pulled MJF to that. Like, that, both men were spectacular that night. And just a really, I can't believe that a pay-per-view that went that long ended with an hour plus long match and the crowd was fucking into
it. It was fine.
It was really great.
When they restarted it and like Brian was in the corner, like, let's fucking go. Like it was almost like a new match was starting.
Yeah. And this was probably the best possible way you could book Danielson to lose. Like,
yeah.
Survived at almost everything, nearly survived at the end. You know, I thought about my boys. I don't want to spill too many words on it that haven't already been said, but yeah, just a really fucking outstanding match. And I think a match that ultimately you will now look back on his feud with Danielson more fondly than if you had a lesser match. Cause now, the road to it, you don't really care that it was that repetitive. You know, history, I think, will be a little kinder to this and be like, you got to see Bryan Danielson wrestle a bunch of mercenaries in outstanding matches. And then you got this all-timer where MJF proves to the world how fucking good he is and then gave an outstanding press conference right after where he's fucking eating pickles and shit. Oh, it's great.
I gotta say something, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's still people out there who's going to be like, yeah, MJF's okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And he kind of alluded to that because he's just like, I don't need to have matches if my five matches of the year are all going to be bangers. But what's it going to take for him to get to that upper echelon of performers, you know?
Well,
there's still people that like go up to AEW fans and they're not, listen, you're not wrong if you want to have this opinion, but it's just like, give me your top five in AEW right now, and I would not be shocked if you asked 10 and 5 of those people are not going to have MJF in their list.
I think that you need to, like, it's fine for MJF matches to be a big deal, but I think they have to be a little bit less spread out than this. It's got to be a little bit less than this.
Yeah.
If this was WWE and it was like MJF only wrestles on pay-per-views, fine, whatever. There's one a month. You can't do that in AEW where there's four.
They just need to add like a New Year's Eve pay-per-view or some shit, and then the schedule will be fine. Cause I like the fact that they spread them out, but like Full Gear to Revolution is rough. And there's not really a definitive, like, I guess that's what they were winter is coming. I guess that's what they're kind of going with it for. But
yeah, like
they need something in between.
I think that, like, I'm cool with the four pay-per-views and then, like, your big events, but, like, Winter is Coming is the only one where really big fucking things have happened, I think. So, like, you need to make, like, Bash at the Beach matter more, or, you know, I think we could probably retire Fyter Fest. We're a little old. We're a little far removed from the joke now, but
Fight for the Fallen.
You know, if you're going to make Blood and Guts like a regular event, like there's things you can do. My point is just, if you want MJF to reach that upper echelon, then you need to allow him to have matches with the best people in AEW and not have it be like once every 2 months or even once a month. Like that's too, it's not enough for a world champion.
Agreed.
Right now. But just overall, an outstanding pay-per-view. I think that MJF comes into this now really strong. And yes, you're thinking to yourself, but Damian, you have not mentioned the most important thing of the night. MJF throwing tequila at a child. I'm going to tell you something, folks.
Oh my God.
You're not going to be happy with me. I'm not going to sit here and try to defend it. But I'm a liar. I'll be a liar if I did not pop for it. I was like, oh boy.
The parody I've seen online was great. There were people that hated it, and there were people that loved it. There was no in-between.
Yeah.
How are you not going to pop at that?
Should he have done it? No.
No.
Should he do it again? No. Maybe. We have not warned somebody in the crowd he was going to do that? Yes, we should have. But he did it. And I think the only thing I'll say about it is a lot of takes afterwards were like, you know, at some point, you're not a heel playing a character. You're just a piece of shit. And it's like, for anybody that's ever paid any attention to who MJF is, like,
do you think he cares?
But also,
that?
Like, that's not who he is. I think he's somebody that probably gets lost in a character, and you can still critique that and be like, yo, there's fucking limits being an adult. But like, let's not act like this was like MJF, Maxwell, Jacob, like Max Feinstein really enjoyed doing that to that child. Like, all right, come on.
No, I just wasn't sure if the kid had special needs. That would have been really bad.
It was bad enough.
Hey,
yeah.
The kid got toys and got to go backstage. He's fine. He's fine.
It shouldn't happen again. We shouldn't condone it. But I thought it was funny.
The mom's face is still great.
That's all I could say about it, I guess. So anyway, AEW now, you know, following this up, ratings don't make sense anymore. I don't know what pops a rating for them anymore, but, you know, we've got Ring of Honor, you know, tapings are happening. They're having their own show now. Eddie Kingston looking like he's going to be challenging Claudio in what'll be a marquee, title feud dating all the way back to, I feel like I never pronounce it right. Chakira?
Shakira.
Yeah. There's going to be a Reach for the Sky ladder match for the Ring of Honor tag titles in honor of Jay Briscoe, with Mark announcing it. I think all we know right now is the Lucha Bros will be involved, but really looking forward to that. Zack Sabre Jr. showing up, having a New Japan NJPW TV title match against, I want to say, Timothy Thatcher, and then calling out Bryan Danielson. So Danielson cut a promo saying it's time to go back home after his match, whether that is just him playing up retirement rumors or whether that's like Bryan Danielson might show up at Ring of Honor for a little bit and, you know, have some fuck around matches with ZSJ. I don't know, but that's cool. But glad that Ring of Honor is getting its own identity again. You know, I'm looking forward to that.
And
did I miss something marquee there?
Yes. FFC alumni.
Oh, yes.
Our pal.
Yes.
Our pal Rex Lawless showed up in a six tag team match against the Embassy. And unfortunately, those scumbags in the Embassy won, but it's good to see our boy.
Also,
it's good to see our boy.
I feel like Willow had a match against Athena for the title, and I can't remember if I'm right or not.
On Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? No, it's a bad look for me, but I think that was Trish Adora.
You can edit this out. No, just kidding.
Yeah, FFC alumni no, continuing to take over the world.
So it wasn't on that episode, but the next episode, it was her.
You're yeah, right. There you go. Okay, cool. Now I don't have to edit it out.
Yep.
Love
your ex.
Yeah, great stuff. Great stuff. Come on the podcast again. Yeah, so, you know, AEW, let's see what happens moving forward. Please be better with the women. Let's get back to some better storytelling and just see what happens next. I'll do my quick New Japan stuff now, and then we'll move to Ryan's segment of the night. But I guess before that, Ryan, any final thoughts on AEW?
They set themselves up nicely for a good spring and summer, and that's all we said that we wanted to happen, and they did. So good job, Tony. You bought another... You got 8 weeks, pal.
Yeah. Go
another
us.
Another 8 weeks from me and Damien.
Go us. We called it again. So, yeah, real quick. So, New Japan. You know, I haven't talked about it in a while. So, the biggest things that happened since the last times we've talked about it is, first off, not New Japan exclusively, but Keiji Muto had his last ever match at the pro wrestling Final Love, Last Love Battle Plus Excellence pay-per-view event hosted by Pro Wrestling Noah.
Long time extreme power.
Literally. Final good, power love. Final love good. struggle. Yeah. Really great. It was a very fun event. I really love Noah and New Japan crossing over like this. The marquee matches were, of course, the last two. Kaito Kiyomiya, the GHC World Heavyweight Champion for Noah, taking on Kazuchika Okada, the reigning, defending, undisputed IWGP World Heavyweight Champion in a outstanding 13-minute long match. Folks may recall that we talked about this before. Going all the way back to last year, Wrestle Kingdom Night 3, Kaito Kiyomiya teaming up with... Who did he team up with? Off the top of my head, I'm struggling to remember. I know that it was Kazuchika Okada and Tanahashi. I just can't remember if it was Kaito and Keiji Muto. Might have been. But Kaito got his fucking ass beat by Okada, and Okada big-leagued him real bad. This year...
Oh, yeah. That was the guy he was beefing against, right?
That was Kaito. Yeah, that was Kaito Kiyomiya, the young ace. Very Rainmaker-esque in a lot of ways. Keiji Muto's understudy, only 25 years old.
Isn't he with DDT?
Now. Kaito?
Or did that just take place at a DDT
co-event? He might have... I mean, there might have been some overlap with DDT because... them and Noah, I think, are owned by the same people. They're both on Wrestle Universe. But no, that was at like Wrestle Kingdom Night 3 that happened. And then when they announced another crossover, this time Kaito Kiyomiya was out for blood. Shoot kicked Okada in the face. Oof. Ended up with one of the best ringside brawls I've ever seen. Okada... just acting like Kiyomiya was beneath him, this whole thing, not showing up to press conferences, giving interviews where he's like, I keep telling New Japan that I'm not doing this. So if like they advertise me and then I don't show up, that's on them. But then eventually showing up after one of Kaito Kiyomiya's defenses, his most recent defense before this against Kenno, which was really good, I want to say, or maybe it was the one against Jip Miller. Hit him with Rainmaker, and just Okada playing the fucking heel to this. Comes in, dominates Kiyomiya. Kiyomiya has a couple of moments of offense where he does his thing, and Okada just embarrassing him, laying him out with a Rainmaker, pinning him 1-2, but then dragging his head up, hitting him with the Emerald Flosion in massive disrespect to Noah. In front of 70K strong in the Tokyo Dome, hitting him with another Rainmaker, and then not even letting the ref raise his hand, just fucking getting his belt and hightailing it out of there. I'm really excited for this feud to continue, and Kiyomi is going to get his comeuppance. And in the final match, Tetsuya Naito versus Keiji Muto, and Keiji Muto's last ever professional wrestling match 40 years after he started his career under the tutelage of Antonio Inoki. Naito and him had an almost 30-minute main event where, you know, in respect to Muto, it wasn't just Naito carrying him. Both men, you know, they did what they needed to make the match feel special. Naito ultimately coming out on top after hitting the Destino. And then Muto saying, you know what, I got a little bit of energy left. And I'm not quite done yet. And he calls out his best friend, old rival, and longtime retiree, professional wrestling legend, leader of the NWO Japan, Masahiro Chono, to one final match. And then he looks over to Tiger Hattori, the legendary Japanese referee, and goes, we need a ref. Hattori, you come up. Chono's face looked like he was going to cry. I really don't know if he planned it. And look, for a guy that walks with a cane, he hit the ropes all right. Hit a Shining Wizard, tapped out Muto with the STF. Beautiful moment. And Keiji Muto rides off into the sunset, giving Chono the retirement match he never got, retiring on his own terms. We talked a little bit about Muto on our crossover episode, Muto being one of the larger crossover stars in Japanese wrestling history, you know, really connecting with Western audiences. But he's probably worth his own episode one day. But all you need to know about Keiji Muto is Keiji Muto, the great Muta, just incredible to be able to have a 40-year career, go out on your own terms, and God bless him for it. It is a wild time we live in.
Not many wrestlers have the ability to do that. So.
No. In many ways, Muto, the Japanese funkster, just kept on trucking. Some people were not super happy with the way he was in the main event for Noah towards the end, but you know, I'm okay with it. I think he put over the right people. That then led us through the new beginning in Osaka and Sapporo, I believe. Okada had an outstanding match against Shingo Takagi for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Again, Okada playing the heel. Shingo narrowly coming out with a loss. Okada kicked out of a Last of the Dragon, which might be the first time that's ever happened. I'm not really sure, unless Ospreay did it once. Got Okada versus Tanahashi in, I think that was Los Angeles, maybe at the Forum as well. That same show as Jay White lost his, you know, Leave Japan match against Hikuleo, and then lost his other match to Eddie Kingston in Loser Leaves New Japan.
At Mania.
Yeah, can't remember if we spoke about this before, but, you know, that was crazy. And now the New Japan Cup's happening, right?
We want the cup date.
Well, I got the cup date for you, baby. So the New Japan Cup this year, New Japan Cup, comfortably New Japan's second most important tournament behind the G1 Climax. New Japan Cup winners, I would love to know the success rate on them converting into a championship, but seeing as how usually they will get their match sometime around Dominion or so, a decent chance of winners coming out on top. But the New Japan Cup is a good way to help establish somebody as an upper card guy. So this year, we had a pretty solid spread. In the first round, on the left side of the bracket, we had Sonata versus Taichi, the winner of which would go on to face Kenta. Tetsuya Naito versus ELP, who would face the winners, who would face Chase Owens. Ren Narita versus Evil, the winner of whom would face Jeff Cobb. Toriyano versus United Empire's Mark Davis, the winner of whom would take on Will Ospreay. And on the right side, Yoshihashi versus United Empire's Kyle Fletcher, the other half of Aussie Open, the winner of whom would take on Hiroki Goto. Shingo Takagi versus Aaron Hinare, the winner of whom would take on Tama Tonga. David Finlay versus Tomohiro Ishii, who would go on to face Great Okan. And Shota Umino versus Yujiro Takahashi, the winners of which would take on Zack Sabre Jr., who, of course, is now a member of the Mighty Don't Kneel. So here's the thing, right? Some real surprises in the first round. All right.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I see him.
So Sonata,
I sees
Sonata versus Taichi. Sonata goes over, great match, and then goes on to beat Kenta. Tetsuya Naito goes over on ELP and goes over on Chase Owens, and you will now get Naito versus Sonata in the semis. Not semis, I don't know, whatever. Quarters.
Quarters.
Renarita would drop to Evil, unfortunate, who would then take down Jeff Cobb, double unfortunate. And then, I don't know, apparently this surprised people, but Mark Davis beat Toriano. I don't know why they thought you. I don't know why people thought you were going to get Yano versus Ospreay, but you
didn't. Toriano is like the king of winning the first round of anything. You know, yeah, it's like almost like death taxes Toriano winning the first round of a tournament.
It's just really clear that they were setting up a lot of United Empire shit here. So like, you were going to get Ospreay Davis, and that was another match of the year contender. Ospreay just fucking anytime he steps into the ring.
Yeah, he's going to be taking on his buddy, huh?
Last night. Beat his buddy. Now go on to take Evil. Yoshihashi, I did think he was going to beat Kyle Fletcher to have a Bishamon battle between him and Hiroki Goto, but ultimately Fletcher went on and then lost to Goto. Goto, I believe, might have been the first ever back-to-back New Japan Cup winner. And the first time he won the New Japan Cup, I think he won the G1 in the same year. It was a real fucking huge moment for him. So the New Japan Cup in many ways is Goto's tournament. Probably the biggest surprise of the tournament thus far, Aaron Hinari taking down Shingo Takagi in the first round. But then, unfortunately, dropping to Tama Tonga, who remains white hot as a babyface despite everybody thinking otherwise. David Finlay, who has now positioned himself as possibly the new leader of Bullet Club, but having some real beef with ELP, who might be turning babyface soon. Finlay would beat Ishii in the first round and goes on to face Great Okan tomorrow, at time of recording anyway. Shota Umino would beat Yujiro Takahashi. Fine with that. See you later. And he'll be taking on ZSJ in, you know, if the New Japan Cup is not Goto's, it is certainly Zack Sabre Jr.'s. And they will be facing each other. So, what you're left with, in other words, Sonata versus Naito, Evil versus Ospreay, Goto versus Tama Tonga, David Finlay versus the Great Okan, and Shota Umino versus Zack Sabre Jr. So, if I were a betting man, on occasion I am, I would say that Sonata pulls the upset over Tetsuya Naito, and Evil probably
beats... You're gonna put it over Ospreay?
Yeah, it probably beats Ospreay, so you get Sonata versus Evil, because New Japan really wants to keep trying to set that up as the feud it should have been.
Oh my
been,
god.
But with Evil's character, it's just never gonna be that.
Listen, I am the ultimate casual when it comes to New Japan. I feel we've been fucking discussing this for the last 3 years.
It's happened like
going to California in 2020, and we were like, Evil versus Sonata. 2021, Evil versus Sonata. Is Sonata finally going to do it?
No, he doesn't. He shows like this brief fucking glimpse of like something different, and nothing happens. So all you can hope for is that if this does indeed come to pass, that Sonata truly does fucking snap on Evil and like have a character change. But I don't know, who the fuck knows. They'll probably send Evil to the goddamn finals. What do I know? Goto versus Tama Tonga, honestly, I don't really know. I can tell you that I feel fairly confident David Finlay beats Great Okan and goes on to face Zack Sabre Jr. It looks like they want to give Finlay that push. I would personally prefer seeing ZSJ versus Goto. However, I feel like what you're going to end up with is Tama Tonga versus David Finlay, where if we do get Evil in the finals, I would expect David Finlay to go to the finals and win his first ever New Japan Cup as he wars for Bullet Club, head of Bullet Club or Bullet Club Ace. But of course, the most blessed timeline would be Naito beating Sonata, Ospreay beating Evil, getting another classic between Ospreay and Naito, Goto beating Tama, and Zack Sabre Jr. beating Finlay or Great Okan to get Goto versus ZSJ, and then you get Will Ospreay ZSJ.
I like that.
They met in last year's New Japan Cup in an instant classic. I would really love to see, you know, Ospreay off the heels of that loss to Okada, still kind of reeling, trying to figure himself out, versus Zack Sabre Jr., New Japan TV champion, member of the Mighty Don't Kneel. I'd really like to see where that went. And, you know, Ospreay winning the New Japan Cup, he's just in that mode right now where either one of them can win. But like I have a feeling you're going to get Finlay as the winner, but hopefully it's not Finlay versus Evil. I would prefer Finlay versus Ospreay.
I want to see Naito versus Ospreay. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah, there's potential for good matches here. It all boils down to, you know, I think that Gato has made it fairly clear that, you know, Evil, he's not going to put him back in a main event, but also we don't know. Because then Evil picked up the World Heavyweight Championship most recently at the last event. And so, like, I don't know anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. He's too convoluted.
If you were going to let Evil be the guy he was in LIJ, just as a bigger asshole or some shit, he'd be his biggest fan. But this shit ain't working for me. It's fucking dull. Whatever. Anyway,
is New Japan Cup usually reserved for the people that they're trying to push?
Yeah, the New Japan Cup is when, like I said, like Goto when he started getting his mega push, ZSJ, three-time winner, possibly, if not at least two. He's a two-time winner for sure. I just can't remember if he's a three-time winner. Yeah, the New Japan Cup is where they like to establish new challengers, which is why if they really want to set Finlay up as like possible ace of Bullet Club, this is probably the tournament to do that. And like you might think that you'd be going back to the well too quickly with Ospreay or ZSJ, but also their feud is one of the best in Japan. But you know what? Listen, there's lots of room for shit to happen that I have no idea about. You might very well get Goto versus Naito. You might get Goto winning. That might be a record if he wins the New Japan Cup again. For all I know, you get Tama Tonga versus Evil and Tama Tonga wins. I mean, there's some intrigue. I'm just not sure where Gato's heading. But regardless, once the New Japan Cup is over, you're going to have the Multiverse United, Only the Strong Survive joint Impact and New Japan Pro Wrestling event. I think that might be the first one they've had since their reunion started, where you've got some really cool stuff happening, like Rocky Romero. It's an X Division Championship six-way scramble. Rocky Romero versus Clark Connors versus Kevin Knight versus Frankie Kazarian versus Rich Swann versus Trey Miguel. The Impact World Tag Team Championships four-way match. Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, Aussie Open, against Bad Dude Tito and Shane Hayes, the Mighty Don't Kneel, versus Ace Austin and Chris Bay versus Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin. An eight-man tag, PZO, Sammy Callahan, Alex Coughlin, and Fred Rosser versus Eddie Edwards, Joe Hendry, Tom Lawler, and JR Kratos. The Knockouts Championship, Deonna Purrazzo and Giselle Shaw versus Mickey James and Mio Yamashita, which is huge. And then the Impact World Championship match where you're going to get Josh Alexander versus Kushida. Just like a really fucking excellent looking lineup. And then that's going to lead you to Sakura Genesis, April 8th. Where I'd probably expect, we'll see. You could see the New Japan Cup winner get their shot there, but you're going to get the winner of Okada versus Tanahashi in Battle of the Valley versus somebody. So
that's right. Legendary wrestler Jack Somebody is coming back.
Yeah, Jack Somebody, legendary Japanese wrestler. So the New Japan Cup will be concluding March 21st. It's a Tuesday next week. So, you know, it's been a good tournament. Keep your eyes and ears out. And I guess also for anyone that's not aware, Mercedes Moné, of course, IWGP World Women's Champion.
I thought she was going to AEW. That's what everybody said.
You know. You know.
What a crazy thing to let somebody get a couple weeks in their new division.
Yeah, go figure. Oh, spoiler alert for anyone that hasn't seen Battle of the Valley yet. Okada won. Sorry.
Yeah, we'll edit that out. Thank you.
Not editing shit. Not editing shit.
Spoilies.
So yeah, you know, New Japan, listen, love the cup. New Japan excels at tournaments. Go out of your way to catch you some matches. I got to do the same. I'm still catching up some other shit as well. But anyway, any other Japan type stuff I got to talk about? Nah, I think we're all good for now. So Ryan, why don't you ride us out into the sunset, baby? What do you have cooking up in the old noggin?
All right. Well, next week is, well, sorry, 2 weeks will be our proper Mania episode. But I thought it'd be fun to like cover some forgotten things, some stuff to remember, just an overall amalgamy of WrestleMania.
That's a really great concept, since the main event of WrestleMania features Cody Rhodes.
That's right. Are you calling Cody Rhodes an amalgamy? Forgotten?
Ryan, haven't you heard? He's ungoddamn deniable. He's undesirable to ungoddamn deniable. I would never say that about Cody Rhodes.
Oh, your favorite wrestler.
Cody's doing great. He's a good kid. Cody.
He's getting his chops.
He's a good kid. All right. A little bit of wait, that happened. I can dig that.
Damien, are you a fan of Sporkle? Do you know what Sporkle is?
I haven't worked in construction, so I mean, I only have a limited understanding of it, but that's what goes in your walls, right?
Yes, that's correct. Sporkle is a website where you're timed, but you can do all a bunch of different quizzes. And that's right. This is our advertisement plug.
Yes, no, it's like, what is this? do you get some deal I don't know about?
No, Sporkle is a cool website. Like, for example, I'm a freak, so I like to look up, like, you know, countries that end in Y, name them all. You have like 2 minutes. Like, here's a bunch of flags. Like
Switzerland.
Yeah, there you go. Switzerland D. But I thought it'd be fun to put you in the game zone right about now.
Okay.
So we're going to do two games. You're going to have to give me the top 10 wrestlers who have won the most and the top 10 wrestlers who have lost the most in WrestleMania history. Now, both lists contain names that you know, so I'm not going to pull out, like, fucking, I don't know, Rick Martel or some shit like that. So don't think too outside the box. Think about it to the time you watch wrestling. So like,
yeah, Mania's not that old. I can get this done.
Right. So think back the last 40 years in your head. And I'm going to put 3 minutes on the clock. Just give me 1 second.
Now, is this 3 minutes for both or 3 minutes each?
3 minutes each.
And do you want me to rank them or just name them out random?
Name them out random. It doesn't, like, you, like, all right. So, yeah, no, name them.
Name them at random, but I can also guess a number.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
So we'll start off with.
Do you already have the numbers in front of you?
Yes, I do.
So you'll tell me yes. Okay, cool.
Yep. Okay. Great. Okay. So let's start off with who has won the most matches at WrestleMania. So let's start the clock and go.
All right. Well, I feel like number one's The Undertaker.
Correct. 25 wins, 2 losses.
Yeah. Now, if I had to guess a number two, I might be inclined to guess Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels is not on the list.
Shawn Michaels is Mr. WrestleMania. You know what that is, right? Actually, I remember now that I think he's lost more matches than he's won. Okay. The Hulkster got to be somewhere on the list.
Number four, 8 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw.
All right. Let's see here. Well, I guess I'd be a little shocked. Nah, he wasn't really around long enough. But okay, for argument's sake, is Stone Cold around number 10?
Not on the list.
Yeah, I didn't think so. He's a little too short. Macho.
Macho Man, number 10, 7 wins and 4 losses.
All right. All right, let's see. I gotta think Triple H is up there somewhere.
Triple H, number 3, 10 wins, 13 losses.
All right, cool. So I don't have number 2 yet, huh?
Nope, you don't have number 2.
All right. Well, haven't said him yet, right? Is The Rock around number 9?
The Rock is not on the list.
Yeah, that's also not that surprising. All right, let's see. Mania. Bork Lesbar?
Not on the list.
Okay. Oh, well, Cena?
Cena, number 2. 10 wins, 5 losses. You have the top 4 locked up now.
Got the top 4.
So I'll pause this right here. You're at a minute 47. So you need 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. All right. Let's go.
All right. Well, I haven't guessed any tag team guys yet, so I feel like you wouldn't have one without the other, but yes. Oh, is it? Yes.
We'll put a couple seconds back on the clock. There are no tag team guys on the match on the list. So
okay. This is like singles matches.
Right. Singles
exclusively.
Guys. Yep.
Okay. All right.
All right. Keep going.
All right. Missing some notable names here. Let's see. Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle, not on the list.
Not on the list. All right. I'm overthinking it here. Edge.
Edge is at number 5. 8 wins, 5 losses. You need 3 more.
Right.
Sorry, 4 more.
I guess I'd be a little surprised, but Kane?
Kane, number 7. 8 wins, 9 losses.
Huh. Go figure. Nah, they wouldn't be. Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan is not on the list.
Batista.
Batista is not on the list.
I need longevity. Ric Flair? Nah.
Ric Flair? Nope.
Shit. I'm gonna end up dropping out here.
Don't overthink it. 10 seconds.
I've overthought it, Ryan. I've got
shout out names. Just shout out names.
No, I can't do it now. Christian.
Okay.
Devon Dudley.
No. And Paul.
Kevin Owens.
Not bad. No.
Oh,
not bad. What?
Roman Reigns. I didn't say Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns was number 9. He has 7
God.
Wins and 2 losses.
Oh, I did not acknowledge our tribal chief, Ryan.
I think you're going to kick yourself at the next 2.
I'm going to be madder about Roman, I promise.
Randy Orton.
Ah.
Clocked in to number 8 with 8 wins and 10 losses.
Yeah.
And Bret Hart was number 6.
You know what? Bret, that is a little surprising, but I do forget that, I mean, for a good like decade, he was legitimately maybe their best, one of their most over people. Randy Orton and Roman, that's dumb. It shouldn't have forgotten them.
That's good, though. That's pretty good.
Yeah, not
you
bad.
Got the top 5.
Not bad.
Okay. So we'll switch off to losses. Losses? I will give you a hint just because I gave it to you for the last one. So we'll have full clarity in Ryan's cavalcade of games here. There are 2 guys who are known tag team individuals that are on this list. Okay?
Okay.
But again, same time frame. I'm not going to throw Rick Martel out there.
Yeah,
he's getting all the hate tonight. So here we go. Most losses at WrestleMania history and go.
Honestly, this I feel like I would guess Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels, number 3, 11 losses.
Really not Mr. WrestleMania. You gave me... Are there any repeats here? You gave me some records.
Yes. Yes.
You just said somebody had 10 losses and I don't remember who it is now. Actually, this one's harder. This one's
going to be a little harder.
This one's
but again, if you just think of the names.
I don't know. Let's see. Ricky Steamboat?
No. Nobody prior to 90 on here.
Oh, no one prior to 90?
Yeah.
Okay. Stone Cold?
No.
The Rock?
No.
Randy Orton?
Randy Orton at number 5, 9 losses.
Got to get there in the first place, right? I don't think I said him yet. Seth Rollins?
No.
No Seth Rollins. Too recent. Triple H.
Triple H, number 1, 13 losses at
WrestleMania. Can't say the guy put nobody over.
Right?
Did I say John Cena yet?
And John Cena is not on the list.
Yeah, he kind of won every time. Not Bray?
Nope.
No. You said there are two known tag team guys here.
Yes.
Christian?
No.
Jeff Hardy?
No.
Matt Hardy?
Correct. Seven losses and number 10.
That's a little surprising, honestly. Are any of them women?
No.
No, only men. All right. So 1990 to now. Brock didn't. Kurt Angle?
Kurt Angle is not on the list.
There's people that lose all to Kevin Owens.
No,
he loses a lot.
Think more prior gen. You got to think about people who Rey are Mysterio? Wrestling a lot.
I guess he wasn't really at
me. No, he's not.
No. One of the Dudleys.
No.
Edge.
No.
No. Other tag teams here. This one is harder. This one is definitely harder.
30 seconds. Think more single guys.
Taz? Nah, he was never pushed like that. Batista?
No.
Daniel Bryan?
No.
Sheamus?
No.
Boy. Really, really striking out here.
10 seconds. Think big heels.
Think big heels. Sergeant Slaughter?
No. And
Jake
one more
the
guess?
Snake.
No. So you missed the Big Show. He's at number 2 with 12 losses.
Big Show.
You missed Kane at number 3.
I was thinking Kane.
That's what I was saying about like big heels.
I was thinking Kane. I wouldn't have guessed Big Show, but I can be mad about Kane.
You got Shawn Michaels. I can't believe Shawn Michaels isn't on the win list. That's
he's known as Mr. WrestleMania, but you forget that he almost never won.
Right.
Because how many wins did he have?
Six.
Six?
Yeah.
One of those was Triple H.
Yep.
One of those was Ric Flair.
Correct.
One of those was...
I don't have the full list in front of me, but I think...
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, like, maybe two were Triple H? I know one was Triple H. One was Flair.
His wins? Yeah.
Yeah. One was Flair. I feel like maybe one was Randy Orton or Cena. Nah, I feel like Cena went over. I don't know, whatever. Point being, one was Undertaker, right? He lost to Undertaker. Twice? Did he have two matches with Undertaker? The one that I remember is like the light versus dark one when he came back. I don't remember if he had another one.
Okay, well, he won against Bret.
Oh, right. He won against Bret.
Boyhood Dream. He lost to Diesel, believe it or not.
Lost to Diesel.
He beat Razor Ramon.
Right, 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 right. Intercontinental Championship match, right?
Yeah. He lost to Bret Hart. Okay.
Yeah, we don't need to go over the losses. That's fine.
Whatever. Okay.
Point
okay.
being.
Sorry.
All right, who else did I miss?
A little too down the rabbit hole there.
who right. else did I miss?
Chris Jericho.
I figured Jericho should have been on one of those lists, yeah.
9 losses. Ziggler. Was that 9 losses?
You know
that
what?
Was a little obscure. You had to think about that.
Yeah, I think that's why I guess Kevin Owens. I figured there was somebody. I was trying to think of like who are people that get on Mania a lot but tend to lose.
So if you got this one, I was going to be very surprised. But the other tag team guy I was thinking of was Shelton Benjamin.
Shelton Benjamin. I didn't even think he was at enough Manias for that.
He has 8 losses.
Fascinating.
And Goldust.
Goldust.
Goldust has the worst record at WrestleMania of all time.
No.
0-7.
Yeah. Couldn't have given him one against the Codester. Well, that's
fun.
You
know what? Like, that match, I was going to bring that up earlier when we mentioned him, but like that match, like whatever he does, I know he's like supposedly on his last run, but he has that. You know what? Goldust is not going to be remembered as a giant champion or anything like that, but he'll always have that match. Even though he lost, but anyway, 5-star match.
It's a great match. Match.
It's wonderful.
Well, I love a game.
Yeah. Thanks. That was brought to you by Sporkle.
Sparkle. That's a stupid name.
All right, so let's go through some fun lists, shall we? Let's go through WrestleMania moments we probably should have forgotten about. This list, Pat McAfee versus Mr. McMahon. That was,
no, you know what? No, because it's gonna be a bunch of like celebrity shit. They're gonna say like Sami Zayn versus Knoxville or like
it's not.
Is Butterbean one of them?
Yeah, Butterbean is one of them.
Yeah. Butterbean is. That was a weird fucking time for wrestling for WWF, wasn't it?
It was. In fact, I think that's like the first WrestleMania I remember watching. And I remember like, who the fuck is Butterbean? Why is there a boxing match?
Which one would that have been? Like 13 or 12?
14.
14.
No, I'm sorry, 15.
And was that the one where it was him versus Dr. Death?
Yeah. Well, Dr. Death was supposed to fucking win the match and then...
And Butterbean knocked his ass out.
Vince Russo put him in a fucking, which Bart Gunn, to his fucking credit, is a goddamn Golden Gloves. And everybody backstage said, he's an actual boxer.
Yep.
Don't fuck around.
Yep. And he fucked around.
And of course, Bart Gunn thinking to himself, like, I'm going to fucking grab the brass ring and knock everybody out.
And then he did.
And then he got knocked out by Butterbean.
And until he met Butterbean. And that was
and it was never heard from again.
Idiot.
Aki Bono versus The Big Show. I've better forgot about that one. It was a legit sumo match.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's a fun fact. Butterbean? Still alive.
Still alive? Oh, boy, God. I would not like to have a conversation with that guy right now.
Also, like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I have any idea how this is, but, like, he is 58. He is 77 and 10.
Bro, Butterbean is legendary. I mean, a lot of those wins are like,
that's what I was saying. Like, I don't know how many of them were like against actual talent. A lot of these guys don't have any Wikipedia article.
But bro, he was in Pride. He was like in MMA when MMA was still like, let's take a fucking jiu-jitsu guy and put him against a boxer.
Just a big fucking boy who couldn't get knocked out.
He is legendary for sure.
Sick 9 submissions. Oh, would I pay to watch Butterbean put someone fucking submission?
I'm telling you, look up Butterbean shit on YouTube. It's great. Like, look that up. I'm pretty sure he has a match against Don Fry. He faced Bob Sapp. It's good.
He faced Bob Sapp. That's fun.
We did an address that fucking Bob Sapp
is IWGP heavyweight champion Bob Sapp.
Bob Sapp in Longest Yard. I'm still not going to get over that. He's a fucking cheeseburger. No, he's not Cheeseburger Eddie. He's fucking, I love Little Michael.
I love Little Michael.
Great. What's some other shit we should have probably forgotten about? Hulk Hogan versus, all right, Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez. Yeah. Okay. You were a little young for that one, but when you look at that record, maybe it's not so great.
Was Hogan Warrior Mania?
No,
it wasn't. It was just a match. It was bad. You know, to be honest, this is the problem with like forgettable WrestleMania matches or like matches where you're like, oof, can't believe that happened. Like,
I guess that's why we're supposed to forget about them.
Yeah, because you like I'm trying to think of
well,
the last.
Well, I can think of like Daniel Bryan getting knocked down in 2 seconds.
Yeah, but
Sheamus.
Like, yes, that was for me a what the fuck. But I wonder if other people felt that was a what the fuck, or if it was like because like remember at that point in time, Daniel Bryan was not that over. Like he was, but he wasn't right. Like that. Wasn't like yes movement, Daniel Bryan.
It wasn't that far behind, though. You know, you got to think about it from that aspect.
What I do remember about, I remember vividly, is like that was one of the first WrestleManias I watched, and I remember people telling me about Daniel Bryan. I didn't really know who he was. I remember the whole big spectacle where he like leans over and kisses AJ, and then looks up and oop, bro kick 1, 2, 3. And
this
I was
is
like,
your hero.
It's like, oh boy, wrestling's cool now, huh?
All right, I got a better list. So it's stuff you forgot about, but that they're actually good shit at WrestleMania. So
is one of them Bad Bunny? Because I don't want anyone to forget that Bad Bunny and Damian Priest put on a goddamn spectacle.
No, but we'll put that number one. How about that?
Was that versus Miz and Morrison?
Yes.
Outstanding match. Outstanding.
All right, so number 10, we have Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper. WrestleMania 8.
Sometimes I forget that Roddy Piper was a wrestler, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
Think about it. By the time that we were like born, Roddy kind of wasn't wrestling as much. By the time we would have been paying attention to wrestling, like 95, 96, he was like basically, he was almost retired.
And he was pretty much just like the mic guy.
Yeah, he's the mic guy.
WCW.
I knew who he was, but I like didn't know anything about him as a wrestler.
Jake Roberts versus Rick Martel. There he is. Rick Martel, WrestleMania 7, in a blackout match. Now, here we go. This is what they should have fucking done instead of goofy paint Mountain Dew match.
You do not sit here and disrespect World Mountain Dew Pitch Black Champion Bray Howdy Wyatt, okay? You do not sit here and disrespect him.
What was the term I was thinking of that I saw today? It was wrestle shit, wrestle crap. Like, sometimes you just have to enjoy it. It's a thing in wrestling that you have to accept if you're going to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, listen, it's there's some crap. Stuff. It's great. There's some stuff.
Goldust versus Triple H. We all know what happened with that one. I did not forget the fucking TLC match. What the fuck? Number
which,
six.
Which
TLC
one?
TLC WrestleMania 2. The
17?
One.
Who forgot that?
Okay, so I guess 2000. There was one before that. That
I
kind of
thought
okay,
that was...
You know
but
what?
I thought that was a ladder match. Or are you saying the one that was at...
All right, no. So it was before 17.
But
so
I didn't think that was a full-on TLC match. I thought that was like either just a ladders match or like a tables and ladders
match.
Oh,
and it just became a TLC match?
I feel like I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong, but I kind of thought 17 was the first ever TLC match.
We'll have to look that up. Tables, ladders, and chairs, oh my. So this was the first Undertaker versus Triple H match coming in at... The first one. I forgot about it. Yeah, so at WrestleMania 17, the first time they fought.
Yeah.
It was the Cerebral Assassin gimmick versus the American Badass.
Yeah.
This is a good women's match. Trish Stratus versus Mickie James. Do you know about this one?
Well, I mean, that's a legendary rivalry, and people often forget how good Mickie James was. And not to mention, people forget, with no disrespect to a lot of the women that wrestled in that era, Trish was fucking good.
Oh, no, this is when she shed all the supermodel shit and like was a good wrestler. Chris Jericho versus CM Punk. This was at the New York WrestleMania. This is the probably... He wasn't going to headline, but maybe he should have headlined.
Stupid idiot.
Yep. I didn't forget about this one because that is one of the most legendary spots of all time. Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins in 31. Like...
Oh, the one where Seth Rollins pops 30 feet into the air for an RKO?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, in fairness, you could argue that no one remembers the match, only the spot. The match was also very good.
Yeah, that's true. But it was a good match. And then
I love how excited Randy got after he hit that because he didn't think it was going to work.
Oh, yeah. No, he was like laughing or something to himself. He's like, oh, shit, I got to cover him. That was good. Number one, they have Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard versus Tito Santana and Rick Martel. But I guess it's because, there were two guys from... The Horsemen that were actually in WWF for a time.
WrestleMania legend Rick Martel.
Yes, that's right. The model baby. All right, that was 10 that you forgot about. They were actually good.
Here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
I would argue in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, like you forget plenty of matches in Mania, but I'm struggling to think of many matches where I was like, this is hold your nose fucking terrible. Not that they haven't happened, but
yeah,
like what's the last fucking awful Mania match you can think of?
Jeez.
Where you were like, Jesus Christ, this is bad. Like, I don't know. Asuka Charlotte wasn't necessarily a bad match, but
Asuka Charlotte was actually on one of these lists. That was a good match.
It was a good match. Yeah. It's just like,
forget about the outcomes. Like think of the actual match itself.
That's fair. Yeah, like it's kind of been a while.
We wanted Asuka to win, but obviously that did not happen.
It's been a while since I can remember a WrestleMania match where I was like, this is fucking bad. Now, what I will say is, call me...
Oh, I know. Well, I can give you one. Fucking Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton.
Oh.
And then Bray Wyatt versus... who did he face? And
oh, no. It's multiples.
Was it The Fiend against Randy Orton again? Yeah, when Alexa came out and then spit black
shit. Yeah, yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. That wasn't great. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I haven't. Maybe it's been too soon since I have started watching WrestleMania again, where I was like, I mean, this is bad.
The talent is so good that they're not going to allow that to happen. You know, it's not like you're getting Butterbean versus Bart Gunn on one of these.
Yeah.
Or Snooki on a match.
So I won't say this was bad. I won't say this is bad. But which one was this? WrestleMania 34, AJ versus Shinsuke. Not good enough.
Definitely not good enough. People were like... Yeah, no, I didn't need to kick to the balls.
Almost the longest match of that card. Not fucking good enough.
Kick to the balls. That's how that ended. Should've, and we're never going to get it again.
Should have been better.
Where is AJ hurt?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he's hurt. When you look at this year's card, right? So the card's starting to shape up. We're wrapping up here so we can talk about what we know is happening, right?
Yeah.
It was announced recently, I think yesterday, it's official, Edge versus Finn in Hell in a Cell. One of the rare feuds that demands Hell in a Cell. Now, here's the thing I'm curious about, right? Realistically, Edge has to go over in this feud, right? I say has to, not necessarily because but there'd be no reason for Edge to not win this feud, right? Unless you were ready to push Finn to the fucking moon. And if so, is Finn busting out the demon? Because now the demon has lost. I would argue that Finn busting out the demon and losing would be arguably worse than him busting out the demon and losing to Roman, if for no other reason than now the demon doesn't matter at all ever again.
Could this be Edge's last match?
You know, he makes his waves, and while you think that he would like one last title reign and maybe sticks it out another year for a little transitional reign, going out after an almost year-long feud at WrestleMania in a Hell in a Cell match, worst ways to go out for a guy that was never supposed to come back.
Yeah, I guess we'll save that discussion for next episode, but I was thinking about it today, but I did not think about the Demon Finn possibly coming into the match.
Yeah, so we'll save proper discussion, but that's what people are thinking, right? Also got announced Trish, Lita, and Becky Lynch versus Damage Control. Interesting to see Trish and Lita come back, but that should be a fun match.
Yeah,
of course,
cool.
Theory versus Cena. We will talk about this with a little bit more depth, but go watch their promo off. First off, I want to just say, I do not feel that Theory did as poorly as some more vocal proponents seem to. Some people seem to feel that he got ethered as bad as Roman did, and I do not think that is true. I think that he, by and large, held his own, but when you're going against Cena, you gotta have better material than you're bald, because
that's
he'll fucking ether you.
That's the thing.
He'll burn you to the goddamn
ground.
That
was intentional, or they only gave him, but he's not that type of guy on the mic yet, you know?
I think that, if I understand Cena correctly, and I think this is speculation, but it's widely speculated that John Cena, for the last couple of years, for the last, I don't know, say 5-10 years, operates as the are you ready feud, because Cena does not script his promos. Not saying Cena's never scripted his promos or Cena doesn't have, but Cena's definitely one of those guys where it's like, you're good enough. Listen, here are your talking points. Hit what you want to hit, right? That's why he's so meta. I would not be shocked if the entire point of a promo off with Cena, especially with younger talent, is we're not giving you a script. Go out there and out promo John Cena.
Oh, that would be great.
Like I said,
I think it's the opposite. I think they give
you
that
think
guy,
they give them a script and Cena gets nothing, yep. And they see how you react off the cuff.
Yeah,
that's also not, quite possible.
It might not be that black and white, but that's definitely what they did to Roman.
No, yeah, I mean for sure, because Roman tried to stay. And you know, on a rewatch, it's not necessarily that Roman's like shit was bad. It's that Roman could not deliver it the way that would have saved him.
Plus, it wasn't Roman versus John Cena in that promo. It was Roman versus everybody behind John Cena. So
and John was just fucking bodying him. But Theory busting out your bald and him going, dude, I can buy some topic. You just suck. They pipe in shit for your matches.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Also referencing the Monday Night Raw crowd again. So
yeah, really,
that's
good.
Pretty cool.
But whatever, we'll talk about this more in depth in Cena's role, but I'm looking forward to this. It was also announced, Gunther will be taking on Sheamus or Drew McIntyre, almost definitely going to be a triple threat. We'll talk about that more. And then Lesnar versus Omos is really happening because it sure as hell looks like Brock was just like spooky stuff with Bray. I won't do that.
I know. Do you blame him?
All right. All I'll say is I think it's fine to be like, yo, Bray shit is not working right
now.
No,
I don't want it.
We are really rewriting history with like all of a sudden he's always been bad. He's never good. It's always been shit. Vince is the only reason he ever got over. Like we went too far the other way.
We'll have to table this, I guess, but I don't know. They didn't have to go this far with him, you know?
Leave him alone.
Oh, Omos.
Omos.
A lot of people like Omos. I don't know.
I don't want to dislike him. I don't want to dislike Omos.
It's like, where this is going to go, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, the like, only
they
way
should
that,
have done. They should have done fucking Shelton Benjamin.
The only way this matters is if Omos bodies Brock Lesnar.
Oh, my God, dude. Could you imagine?
If Omos bodies Brock Lesnar, then you'll be fucking talking. But if this is just like a reason for Brock Lesnar to pick up a heavy man and slam him, then who cares?
I'm going to be so pissed if it's that. And it's going to be that, isn't it?
Well, like I said, we've got 2 weeks of a build left, right? The next time that we record is going to be after the Raw before Mania. We will have a much better idea of what these storylines are going to do.
Okay.
There's plenty of other stuff that we know is most likely going to happen. But we'll, you know, Seth and Logan, Roman versus Cody. But by the time next episode comes around, everything will largely be settled, and then we'll be able to know where we stand.
Omos takes his zipper from behind his head, and it's Jay White on stilts.
Yes, that is the big speculation is, will Jay White show up at WrestleMania? He is truly gone from New Japan. He has no more scheduled events. We have to believe the contract is fully done. Do we think Jay White shows up on the grandest stage of them all? Or do we think Jay White shows up the Monday after Mania where Cody Rhodes has both of his belts and then you hear the shing? Because if you want
to. He's big enough to get a pop at Mania, right?
Absolutely. As long as you don't do it in like the wrong moment, yeah, 100% Jay is big enough to get a pop. However, if I'm fantasy booking, I might want him to come out against Cody and be Cody's first challenger. A, because it would give Cody an outstanding first feud.
Yeah.
Jay immediately gets shot into the main event scene. One, you know he's going to lose, but that's totally fine. And, you know, listen, Cody has the crowd eating out of the palm of his fucking hand. He's really got his promos down in WWE. And Jay is one of the few that I think could really go toe-to-toe with him. The Bullet Club history, the history with the Elite. Like, there's just a lot that I think Jay White and Cody Rhodes could battle off of. So if I was fantasy booking, that's what I would do.
No doubt I would love for that to happen. I just don't know if they could divorce themselves that quickly from the Bloodline storyline, just because, like, it's going to be momentous. And,
well,
like,
I don't
it's
think
like,
you're
okay,
going to.
Well, no, it's just like you have to let that resonate a little bit.
It depends. Well, here's the thing, right? The Bloodline story the whole point is that this I don't mind talking about because we're going to keep getting layers. The Bloodline story has very little to do with Cody, right? Cody's made that very clear over and over again.
Yeah.
All I care about is winning this title. I don't care about you. I don't care about what this means for your legacy or what, like, all I care about is what it means for my legacy. And that is why Cody and Sammy are able to be as over as they are together without usurping one another, because Cody only cares about the title. He, you know, he's willing to go against Roman and make it personal, but like he doesn't want that. He said it to Paul. He said it to Roman. Everyone keeps trying to make this personal. I'm just here to do what I need to do. Sammy is the one who the Bloodline story continues with, right? That's the way that you keep him hot. So I don't know that I think it's really necessary for Cody to continue with the Bloodline. Am I saying that there's no reason like for him to go out and save Sammy or KO? No, certainly. Am I saying that that means there won't be a triple threat? No. I just think that Cody can move on pretty easily, and it's not going to impact the Bloodline story.
Right. So I don't disagree there. It's just a matter of fact of like
him beating Roman. You want him to just not jump into a feud. Is that what you're saying? Like,
no, I mean like him beating Roman and then like a minute later, like Jay White comes out. It might just be like sensory overload. You know what I mean?
I mean, listen, I hear you. And like I said, this is fantasy booking. I'm not necessarily saying this is what you should do, but if I wanted to give Cody an extremely strong challenger for his first feud, I'd make it Jay, and you'd probably never get as good a pop as the night after he wins the double championship and then Jay White shows up. But like I said, this is, it doesn't mean it's going to happen. Jay Uso, he hugged Sammy. He told him, "I got you, bro." And then he super kicked him. But Jay continues to be the best actor in this entire storyline. Jay made it very clear when he cut his promo against Sammy. He said, "I had to do this. You made me do this. He's my brother. I didn't have a choice." And he wants you to think that what he's saying is, "I'm a big bad heel. I have no choice. You don't matter to me." But that's not what he's saying. He's saying, "You did this. You did what I couldn't do. I didn't have a choice. If I don't do something, Jimmy suffers." This, I am really excited for the last 2 weeks. The next 2 weeks. This is, we are.
When's the last time you said that about WWE?
I think the last thing that I'd say before we wrap up here is this is without a doubt the strongest storyline that I can recall, like literally outside of the Yes Movement and Kofi Mania. I'm not sure. And I would argue that maybe it's because of when I was watching, right? I would put Kofi Mania above the Yes Movement. Personally, I think it was a much better done story, but you know, like I said, I wasn't necessarily watching for the Yes Movement, but I think I might put this above Kofi Mania if for no reason other than Kofi Mania was an outstanding like 6 month build, and this is like 2 years.
No, it's better. It's better than the Yes Movement. It's better than Kofi Mania.
I don't think I can think of any build to any WrestleMania match that I've been alive to witness that is like this good.
Maybe again, there was no insular feud where it was going on like this, like a Taker versus Michaels, Flair versus Michaels, something like that. You know, it didn't go on long enough. This is definitely one of a kind. So enjoy it. Enjoy it.
The only other one that I can think of, it's not as good, but like Randy, you know, Macho Man versus Hulk Hogan, because that was like a very, very good build. But again, this is really on another level. I really don't think anything compares to it.
Sure.
And I am definitely here for Jey Uso to get a singles match against Roman and be Roman's feud after.
Oh, it's
this.
Happening. It's happening.
And I think the best part about this is even though we think it's so obvious what's going to happen, right? They're going to drop the belt, they'll hug Sammy and KO or something, and they'll turn. Like, we have an idea of what is going to happen, but we don't really know how. Right now, 2 weeks out, Kevin Owens has still not been, he's not partnered up with Sammy. He's sticking true to his word, like, I'm done with you. And we don't know how this is going to play out. Will it be Jay? Will it be Jimmy? Will Solo get involved? Like, there's just so many routes for this to take, and that's what makes it so exciting, is even though we think it's fairly obvious Cody beats Roman, Sammy and Kevin Owens are going to beat the Usos, we don't know how we're going to get there. We don't know what the fallout is going to be, and that is what makes this so exciting. The Yes Movement and Kofi Mania stopped when they won the belt. When they won the belt, that ended that storyline. The Bloodline storyline arguably hits its peak after Mania. Roman's fall is not the thing that ends the Bloodline story. It is when Roman's grip over his family is truly done, and Jey Uso gets that comeuppance. For, you know, he gives Roman the comeuppance that he's deserved for 2 years. Like, I can't think of many stories where the big championship match is not the grand payoff of the feud. That is remarkable.
Yeah, if you think right.
The strongest aspect of the Bloodline storyline includes a person who's not involved in it. Like, the feud of Cody Rhodes versus Roman has almost nothing to do with the larger Bloodline storyline. So the fact that this storyline, the most important in WWE, doesn't, the title match doesn't even really matter as much as what happens after is kind of crazy.
Yeah. I think that's why it's almost better that, like, Cody is in the match. Because, like,
I'm going to hand it to them. I can't not. Was I sad that Sammy couldn't get his moment? Sure. But, like, man, Cody is fucking red hot, and you would be a real fucking idiot to not ride that wave.
Absolutely.
It's been booked to perfection. It's remarkable. At this point, I don't even care if Vince has been behind the whole thing from day one. Like, it's just so goddamn good. This is, I really look forward to the retrospective when this is all done, and I can watch, like, a 6-hour fucking Peacock story of it.
Just give me that promo package with My Way versus with Limp Bizkit, baby. Just give me it.
All right. So, to wrap up here, Ryan, do we have a thingy?
Yes. Definitely does not fit the current time of the year, but fuck it.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween.
Close.
Where are you sending it?
To your text.
To my text? Ryan's sending it to my text. Okay, here it is. Who is this tiny lad sitting on the Undertaker, on Santa Claus's lap? It does kind of look like Undertaker, but I feel like this is not.
No, it's not.
I'm just trying to get an idea of what this looks like, the early 70s.
Yeah, maybe a little before, but around that time period.
Yeah. So this is somebody that would have, if this is like right before, so this is somebody who would have started hitting their peak in the mid-80s, early mid-80s.
Yeah. Maybe a little before, but definitely in the 80s.
Let's do a quick zoom in here. I mean, if I zoom in far enough, it looks like Stone Cold.
No.
But that's mainly just because I, like, removed the hair from this picture.
Not Stone Cold.
All right. So is this somebody who was a main eventer in the golden era of WWF?
I don't want to give too much away.
Like,
no. We'll start off with this. He is not known for WWF.
Okay.
He's really not even known for WCW.
So is this somebody who hit their main event status or, like, upper card status in the golden era or, like, in the 90s?
Golden era. Territories.
Yeah, territories is what I'm thinking.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, actually, let me ask. Is it a main event status performer?
You can call him that. In one regard.
I can call him that in one regard. It's not Dustin, is it?
Nope.
It's not Dusty, is it?
Nope.
Nah, his hair's like brown. Okay.
See, I can give you the next clue, but it's just going to give...
Well, like... is it a guy that got over in, like, Memphis?
Yeah.
Or like Mid-South?
Mm-hmm.
Is it somebody who was a contemporary of the king?
Yeah.
But who wasn't the king or Jerry Jarrett or anybody like that?
Maybe not necessarily his moves, but more so his voice.
His voice? Is that JR?
Nope.
Oh, I felt good about that. All right, give me your big hint, and then if I can't get it, you can reveal it to me.
He wasn't a wrestler.
He was a commentator.
Kinda. He was a manager.
Is that son of a bitch corny?
Yes, it is.
God damn
Listen,
it,
motherfucker! I want a goddamn treat set.
You see me as a fucking child, you think you can't guess it? I got a face like a goddamn $100 bill.
If you put glasses on him, it kind of works. It looks like his mouth is about to say, fuck you, Santa.
But you know what? Yeah, he's older. He's like Lawler's age, right? Isn't he like in his 70s?
No, he's like, I don't know, 56?
No.
He's younger than you think he is.
No way.
He's not like, Jerry's like 67. Jim Cornette, 61. He's 61. He's 61 years old.
Jim Cornette,
You know what? He is Jim Ross's age, because I forget that Jim Ross is... Okay, never mind. Jim Ross is 71. I thought he was like my dad's age.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Cornette's only 61. Like, people forget that he was like 18, 20 when he's doing those like Rock and Roll Express promos and shit.
Jim Cornette, the most... Would you call him the most legendary manager of all time?
I'll give that to Bobby, and I think Cornette would tell you that it's Bobby, but after Bobby, yeah, it's Cornette.
I was actually going to say J.J. Dillon, but okay, that's fair. Because if Bobby's the manager for the hottest team of all time... Actually, what? No, hold on. I feel like I'm getting my shit wrong. Was he... He wasn't the Rock and Roll Express's manager.
Jim?
No, Bobby.
No, Bobby is more known for, like, Andre the Giant.
Oh, right. Yeah. Cornette, yeah. Of course, the legendary manager of the Midnight Express with a stupid fucking tennis racket.
Yep.
Continental Wrestling, Mid-South. Yeah, just a real... That's a good point, though, because, like... He was-ish in WCW. Like, he was, but you never think about him there.
No, not even. And, like, yeah, he was in WWF.
But, like...
And he was primed to be JR's replacement, but he just could not stand fucking traveling.
Yeah,
and just could not stand WWF.
Unfortunately, the thing that you're going to remember his time in WWF for is that, like, really poor second invasion NWA shit.
Oh, yeah, and also being on the pilot episode of SmackDown.
Yeah, there you go. Corny, love that. Wrong time of year, but love it.
Yep.
Stupid fucking idiot. Yeah, okay, so... Stupid goddamn misogynistic idiot. Hates Asian people.
But it's corny.
Yeah, sure. So next episode, we've got our Mania rundown proper. We will spend the entire episode... recapping every storyline, every actor, every principal actor, cinematographer, stage editing, all the good stuff. We'll have a much clearer idea of what we're going to be getting into heading in there. And then we can all breathe, hopefully with the Switchblade in his new era. So... Yeah, I don't need to You don't need to know what I'm listening to. The only thing I'm listening to is myself do these episodes, getting ready for the biggest, grandest stage of them all. And also my voice hurts, so I'm not talking to you anymore.
Well, we got Islanders in 30 seconds, baby. Yeah.
30 seconds.
Sorry, 30 minutes.
That's
worse.
See,
I told you. It's a West Coast game, Damien.
Oh, my God.
The 9.5 ABV is hitting me, baby.
Stupid. All right. Well, that's it for us, folks. So for Ryan, for myself, this has been the most electrifying must-listen-to podcast in sports entertainment. Point to the sign one more time, Ryan. This has been FFC.